I'm Izzy Judd, and welcome to my podcast, Let's Talk Fertility. This podcast is sponsored by Pregnacare. During my own fertility treatment and pregnancies, I was recommended to take specialist vitamins and minerals to support my nutritional needs. There are many benefits to taking these supplements, and they also made me feel like I was taking a proactive approach to prepare myself and my body as best I could. Pregnacare Conception and Wellman Conception vitamin and mineral supplements provide advanced nutritional support for men and women trying for a baby, including zinc, vitamin D, and the exact levels of folic acid recommended for women by the UK Department of Health. Pregnacare, expert nutritional care while trying for a baby. To find out more, visit www.pregnacare.com. My guest today is not only a brilliant drummer, but also since becoming the champion of Strictly Come Dancing, he's a pretty good dancer too. He is, of course, my better half most of the time, and daddy to Lola and Kit, it's Harry Judd. I could talk about Harry's wonderful achievements, of which there are many, but today I'm looking forward and very interested to hear Harry talk about our fertility story. And for once, I'm going to have to try and remain quiet and listen to you talking, Harry. It was thanks to you that I felt brave enough to open up and tell our story, and it was your encouragement and support that gave me the confidence to write Dare to Dream. We both felt it was really important for you to write a chapter in the book to hopefully give men the encouragement to talk too. The man's voice is just as important in these conversations around fertility, but it is one that seems to remain silent. So thank you, Harry, for sharing your side of the story today. I'm finding the time from your very busy schedule whilst you've been dancing around the country to actually sit and talk to me without the children round our feet.
Absolutely.
With a cup of tea.
This is like a date.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the intro. That was very formal.
Very formal. Well, I like to give my guests an introduction. They'd normally be given more credit, Harry, and of all your wonderful...
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, it's how I'd like you to introduce me to new people now. If you could do that whole paragraph, that would be great.
Okay. Right.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I think it's very important for people to hear what this experience was like for you as well. But I'm just interested to know, growing up, did you always imagine yourself as a dad and having your own family?
Sorry, I'm still just smiling at the fact that you said you're going to have to let me talk the whole time. We both like to talk a lot, don't we? So I'm going to enjoy this moment because I'm being given permission to speak. So growing up, did I always imagine myself having a family? Absolutely, yes. I've always loved children. I've always loved babies. And yeah, I genuinely, if you ask me that question as a teenager, I think that was one goal of mine in life, to have a family. Not because that's what I feel that something is expected of me, you know, within society. It's just genuinely something that I wanted. I feel very lucky to have come from a happy family. Wonderful parents and a brother and a sister. So I guess that may have something to do with it. But I've always loved children and had always romanticised about, you know, the idea of having a family.
So we met, obviously, on the Wonderland tour when I was playing the violin.
That's right.
And you were playing the drums.
Mm-hmm. We met over the tambourine, didn't we?
We did over the tambourine, because I said previously that it was a triangle. Definitely not a triangle.
I did not play the triangle in McFly.
No, it was the tambourine.
I am the drummer, not the triangle player.
So it was. It was over the tambourine. And I hope you would agree, we fell in love pretty quickly.
Yes, we did. We did. Yeah, it was love at first sight. We first met in a church. We on our second tour with McFly, the Wonderland tour, we had a 16-piece orchestra, and you were one of the string players. And every night when we played All About You, the beginning of the song, I just had this very simple tambourine part, and the tambourine was in your eye line. So whenever I'd hit the tambourine, I'd look across, and every night it just became a bit awkward, didn't it?
Really,
it was like,
awkward.
Oh, shall I look at her?
Is she going to look tonight?
Is she going to be looking? We were literally like school children, and we basically didn't speak the entire tour. Whenever I came to sort of try and find you, it turned out that you were always hiding from me. And we finally spoke on the penultimate night of the tour, actually.
I was being very professional. I had a job to do, Harry.
That's true, yeah, yeah.
But we did, obviously, we got together and we were together very, very quickly, weren't we? I always joke that I kind of moved in and never left.
Yeah, never left.
You had no choice. But we did always talk about having a family.
We did. We always, I remember like car journeys or being at home or whatever, we would always talk about having a family and what would our children be like. And
their names.
What would we call them? Yeah, yeah. So I often think of that now when we look at our children, you know, are they what we could have imagined? Yeah, I was always honest and open with you. I think I told you the second week we'd met that I was going to marry you, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, bit full on, but I was right.
You were right, as always, annoyingly. I think our first challenge as a couple was dealing with my anxiety, and it was something that we had to really work on together. And I actually think that it might have helped us when it came to fertility struggles. How we managed to work our way through our sort of anxiety.
Yeah, the anxiety was a huge struggle for us. It was very unique. You know, we were very close in our relationship, and you know, your anxiety was hard because for me personally, I was kind of torn between wanting to look after and care for you and be there for you, but at the same time, I had such exciting things going on with the band and just life in general as well. And then that became that sort of dependency issue, you know. So we kind of somehow managed to navigate our way through it.
We did.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough, you know. But yeah, certainly when we got to the point where we were married and we started thinking about children and when we got to that chapter in our lives, I feel that we were kind of better equipped to deal with that situation in terms of learning how to be more patient with one another and more understanding. So, yeah, but look, you've had to deal with my anxiety issues too. It's just part of who we are. But, yeah.
Yeah. So we did get married. You eventually decided that, yeah, okay, she's all right.
Well, I kept saying to you, you know, just like extending the engagement by a couple of months every time you would talk to me about the wedding, and I was like, we're not even married, we're not even engaged yet. So I remember actually it was on the Strictly tour when you mentioned it once as if we were like getting married, and I got really annoyed. I was like, right, 6 months, I'm not going to propose to you for another 6 months now, and if you keep asking, I'm going to add on another month. Because genuinely, like the whole romanticising about getting married and having a family, I wanted it to be romantic. I wanted there to be this spontaneous moment. And to be fair to you, I remember after that moment on the Strictly tour, you never talked about it.
Mm. But it's also because other people kept saying, when are you going to get married? And it's the same thing when you are married. It's when are you going to have children?
Exactly. And that's the thing that, you know, when people are in that situation, everyone can relate to. And it's a bit annoying. And you want to be able to do things in your own time. And often, you know, that question, when are you going to have children? Are you planning children? Something that we've learned is that's something we got asked the whole time when we were trying to have children, but it wasn't happening for us. So, yeah.
And we came up with a line, didn't we? That when people would ask us, we would say, we're practicing.
We're practicing, yeah.
Yeah. So we were armed with a reply. So we did get married, and I was then very much, well, let's start a family. But you were a little bit hesitant.
Yes.
Can you remember why? What was it that was going through your mind?
I was only just 27, is it?
Yeah, but we'd been together for like...
I know, but...
8 years or whatever it was.
But I remember when we first got together, you know, you're 2 years older than me. And not that I want to like make a point of that. I'm just saying factually. You're 2 years older than me. And so when we got together, and girls are like a lot more mature than guys anyway. So when I was 19 and you were 21, you'd been in a long-term relationship. So you were almost kind of ready to take that next step. And so I remember when you were like 23, 24, and that fun conversation about, oh, well, imagine if we had children one day, if it ever went further, you know, you were kind of at that stage and I wasn't. And so when we finally got to the stage where we were living together and I, you know, we were both happy with that decision, and then we got married and it was 100% what we both wanted, I still kind of felt like, oh, we're married now, let's let's be a married couple, you know. The wedding is an incredible thing. It was the, you know, it was the, now the third best day. but at the time it was the best day ever, and it's a, you know, huge thing. Committing your life to someone, it's an amazing thing. But essentially, you're still the same. You're the same couple that you always had been. And I pretty quickly kind of gave in, didn't I?
You did. So we started trying, you know, I guess about 5 months, maybe 5-6 months after we got married. Mm-hmm. And the first month of trying, my period didn't start.
Yeah, I was like, that was easy.
Yeah.
Super sperm.
And so we went and got the pregnancy test, and we actually did it at my parents', didn't we? And the test came back negative.
Well, I mean, I was convinced that you were pregnant. Mm. You know, we started trying that month. As you say, your period didn't come. I instantly, and you also, you had some kind of signs, didn't you? Something you said.
Yeah, that's right. I'd had a bit of spotting.
That's right. You were on the, in the bedroom and I was downstairs and you said, oh, Harry, I've had spotting.
And for people listening, the reason that I thought that might have been a sign is because sometimes with implantation, you can get a bit of spotting. But it later transpired that spotting can also be with hormonal imbalance, which would relate to my polycystic ovaries.
Right.
But obviously at the time, I was convinced.
Your period hadn't come, yeah.
And it always starts.
Yeah, I remember I was sat, it was exactly, yeah. And I was sat downstairs and we already knew a period hadn't come. You'd had this spotting. I remember my eyes filling up with tears. I was like, oh my God, you're pregnant. And I was just, you know, so happy. And I remember going back to my mum's as well, and I was pretty much so close to sort of telling them.
Before we'd even done a test.
Before we'd even tell, I was like, I'm pretty sure Izzy's pregnant, you know.
Which also shows that kind of perhaps slight naivety about our experience or our understanding that it can take time.
Yeah. And also, I remember when you were doing the pregnancy test, I was taking photos of you because I wanted to bit weird, but it was actually because I wanted to capture that moment that you would see the positive result. But yeah, little did we know that we were quite far off.
Yeah, that was probably our only happy pregnancy test, obviously, before we saw the result, because everyone that followed was pretty stressful doing the pregnancy test. I went into panic mode.
Yes.
You remained quite calm.
Well, I think it's very different for me, because obviously you went and had some tests and, you know, some potential problems had arisen, and, you know, it was you personally that had to bear the brunt of that. And so instantly it felt like it was my job to try and stay level-headed and be the voice of reason, I guess. Also, you know, often throughout our relationship, you know, you had achieved some amazing things yourself, but I'd kind of been the one that had been in high pressure situations and stressful situations, and you'd always been a huge support system for me. And so this was a moment where I felt I had to kind of do my best to support you. And just try and be like rational, because, you know, I didn't want to say this to you at the time, but you were very irrational. As you say, you panicked, and then panic and anxiety controls you in irrational ways. You know, you don't think straight. So, but at the same time, I don't think I would change the way that we went about this situation, because there were so many ups and downs, and all those moments led to that ultimate decision, and also the way that you ended up dealing with it, which was, you know, I don't think you would have got there if you hadn't gone through the highs and lows.
So those difficult months were basically when I started the treatment of Clomid to help me ovulate. Mm-hmm. And I very quickly lost a huge amount of confidence. What was that like for you?
It was hard. I think the image I have in my head is the, you know, the image of you on our wedding day, you know, looking absolutely, you know, beautiful and happy and smiling, surrounded by family, and to then not sort of 8 months later to see you feeling pretty low, you know, very low, physically, not just emotionally, but physically as well.
I was very uncomfortable.
Like, yeah, very uncomfortable.
In my skin and, yeah.
Yeah, and that just developed and got worse to a point where you didn't want to come to social events with me and, you know, and I remember being on tour, you know, you were struggling not only with the fertility issues but with your anxiety as well. And so you came with me on tour and you sort of would, you know, have your hoodie on and hood up and be hiding at the front of the bus because, you know, you weren't feeling good about yourself and you didn't want people to see you. And it was really, really hard. I remember the band, you know, being very understanding because obviously it was obvious that there was something was wrong. So I kind of explained to them and they were all very sweet and understanding. But yeah, it was really difficult because I think when you get married, it's exciting and you think of exciting times ahead, and the breaks went on pretty quickly and we found ourselves in this difficult situation. Mm. Of something that, you know, your rational mind's telling you just to be patient, it'll all be okay. But it wasn't easy at all.
You always, to me, seemed very calm and rational, but did you ever feel any internal panic or did you ever share any worries with anybody else at the time? Because whenever you would communicate with me, you were always, I mean, you were such a rock and you were always so calm and always so reassuring and always made me believe that this was going to happen. But you must have felt that I had sort of disappeared, really. And did you feel you could talk to anybody or did you just sort of internalise?
Yeah, it's hard because at the same time, you know, you want to talk to someone, but at the same time, I don't want to talk about, you know, you know, I don't want to talk about you being, you know, in your situation, talk about you negatively to people because I don't want people to think badly of you because I, you know, it's a very hard situation to understand. Because I think from the, this is a huge part of what you're doing. It's about the understanding and trying to get the outsiders to understand what that person is going through. It's really hard to understand. Mm. And it was difficult. I think I was a bit frightened of the potential, you know, reality of what might happen to us, you know, or might not, sorry, happen. And yeah, it was really difficult seeing you the way you were. You'd literally just almost overnight just changed. Mm. You know, so I can't remember who I talked to. I was very busy with the band. So
yeah, and you were on tour, so you were buzzing from shows and weren't you? You were kind of in a different, I suppose, slightly different headspace.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate for that. You're right. You know, I was in a very different headspace. So being on tour is amazing, and performing with the band and being around your friends and stuff. And so I feel very fortunate for that. I think often in situations like this, work or whatever it may be is the best form of distraction. But yeah, it was, I mean, what can I say? It was really hard. It was awful seeing you like that. Yeah. I haven't really tapped into that memory because I feel it's, you know, it's not until you really think about it, because it's so easy to move on from those, you know, emotional situations now that we kind of are past that. So yeah, thinking about it now, I just have this image of you, you know, in a kind of hoodie and baggy, you know, joggers and a big cozy coat on, kind of hiding away the whole time. Tough.
I think we had a kind of defining moment in that period of time where we were at home, and I think I was on my sixth round of Clomid or something like that, and I came downstairs, and I don't think I had even done a pregnancy test because I was so frightened that it was going to be negative. So I think my period had started, and I came downstairs, and I vividly remember you were sat at the desk, and I was just completely numb, and I couldn't even cry. I was just so, I had absolutely no emotion really left. I didn't really know what to feel anymore. And I remember I was on the floor, and I remember you held my hands, and you just looked at me, and you were just like, Izzy, you know, worst case scenario, it's you and me. And it was like this huge moment for me, which made me suddenly realise that actually you were in this too, and I married you, and you were the person that I wanted to be with, children or no children. At that time, that was what I really felt. And it was because of that comment that made me go, right, enough, you know, I've got to do something differently, because here's, you know, Harry, who I love so much. I need to do this for him. I need to change this. And that was when I went on my mission to start a detox.
Yeah, everything gets so clouded, doesn't it? You forget what you have, I think, and you forget how lucky we are in other facets of life. But yeah, I meant what I said. I'd obviously like very happy we have Lola and Kit now, but yeah, I guess anything I could do to make you feel, but it was awful. You know, it's really awful to see someone you love just completely lost in this haze of like emotion and depression, I suppose. And, you know, what made it so hard for me as well is, for all your kind of, you know, talents as a musician and just all your positive traits as a person, I knew you would be the best mum. You know, I knew you'd, and that's, you know, subconsciously or consciously, you know, what you think, I guess, when you marry someone and you think you want a family. I knew you were just going to be the best mum ever, just because you're a kind person, simply, you know, put simply, not very eloquent way of putting it, but you are, you're a caring person. And that was what was so, the best word to describe it is, it was just, it felt so desperate, you know. I felt desperately for you, you know, because you deserved it so much. And I mean, everyone deserves it. And that's why now, when, you know, we hear people reaching out to you, whether it's through social media or just people I meet on the street or at events or whatever it is, and they say, you know, we're going through this, like, I instantly feel emotional. Yeah. I instantly, at home, like, you'll read a comment. I'll read a comment on that someone's made on your Instagram about how they've gone through six rounds of IVF and they've had X amount of miscarriage, and I just start crying because I'm just like, I know what it's like. I feel desperately sorry for people. But also then to see that, you know, they have been able to kind of even just share that small comment or gain some kind of, hope from reading your story or whatever it may be. You know, that soon kind of perks me up a bit, because that's why it was so important for me for you to share this story, because, you know, fertility issues, it can be such a lonely and isolating place. The best way you ever described it is like your life is just on pause because suddenly nothing else matters. Yeah. You haven't got your baby yet, but you feel like instinctively it's there, and it's, you know, and you just, your life is just on pause.
Yeah.
But actually, it's not. And like you said, we then got to this point, well, you then got to this point where you thought, I can't go on like this, because you literally will not be able to cope. Not just in terms of your fertility, but just life in general.
Oh. Yeah, I was totally drowning and I couldn't carry on that way. And I think also, you know, it's sort of getting that bit between your teeth to do something and make a change. And that was, and you were what that was.
Mm. It's funny because you kind of, I think it helps to take control of the situation, but at the same time, it's not good to be too controlling, because you can't control the whole situation.
Well, I think being a control freak was my biggest issue around and my biggest hurdle. Mm. With fertility. And I think that was what was so difficult, was that I felt so responsible. You know, I felt that it was my fault and my issue and my problem. And for you, something I wanted to give you so much. And the responsibility of that, you know, was overwhelming. And and not just you, it was also, you know, grandparents and family members. There's so many people you want to give have a family for.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we did move on, and I started this detox, and really quickly there was a huge change. I mean, would you agree?
100%, yeah. You're basically, your mindset, you know. It's very easy for people to come along, and there's that classic kind of saying that people always said to us and say to other people, you know, you just need to relax. And I think for someone going through fertility issues or any issues in life, then it's not really a very helpful thing to say. But when you are ready to be able to face it in a positive way, I think that's the key word, is to be, you know, to try and find some sort of positivity and put that into, you know, whatever the situation is. That's the key, really. And that's what you did. Your whole outlook changed, and you just you just became more positive in everything you did with the way you looked after yourself, whether it be nutrition or exercise, or just, more importantly, your mind, you know, with your yoga and your meditation and the little kind of sayings you'd put around the house, you know, and pictures and things that just made you feel good and made you, you know, and it's more of a habitual thing, I think. It's the same with a lot of mental health problems, is you train yourself to think in a certain way, and it's retraining your mind to think in a more positive sense. And for me, I just kind of sat back and was just happy just to see you be like that. It didn't take anything for me to do to help you with that. You just did it all yourself. It was great.
After about 4 months, 5 months, I really felt that it was time to try something else. And it wasn't, when I spoke to you about the detox as well, that period of time, I didn't do it because I thought if I did it, I would get pregnant. I think that was where the shift was in the way we were talking about it. So instead of our life becoming about we're trying for a baby, we almost parked that for a little bit and started to think about how we could make the best of this situation.
Yeah,
this
it time. Just wasn't the one and only thing that we would ever just talk about. Yeah.
But when I came to you and said, I want to have IVF, you were very hesitant.
Yeah, very hesitant, yeah. I think because I didn't know anything about IVF, and I think it was like, it felt like such an extreme option. And I think also I was scared that that was our final option. I was scared that, I remember saying this to you, I said, if I'm honest, I'm scared, because if this doesn't work, like, then what? I'm worried that this is like the final hurdle, and surely there are other things we can just keep trying, because if this doesn't work, then that's it, you know?
Which was where we differed, because I kept saying to you, but now I finally feel that there's hope. And we went for a walk, and we went to Richmond Park the day that we decided, and you took a photo of me.
Yeah.
And behind the photo was this cloud.
Yeah.
And it looked like a bird was carrying a stalk. I know you're looking at me now like you're such a so hippy-dippy. But I carried that photo. That photo for me was like, that stayed with me through every injection that I did, every appointment I went to, everything. And even the day I gave birth to Lola, that picture was with me, because I truly believed it was a sign.
But I try not to laugh, because I think it's the little things like that that were important to you and that made a difference. You know, you had that mantra that you would always say, what was it? You had it in the bathroom.
Amazing things will happen.
And I just remember thinking, God, that's like amazing that that's helping her, but to me that was just like, might not, you know, but obviously I'd never say that, but
thanks. I'm very pleased that you didn't disrupt my positive.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not, you know, it's not to say that all of these things weren't the reason that you had a child, but, you know, even if it's the silly things that just make you feel better, then they're not silly, you know. If that's what you needed, then that's what you needed.
Do you remember the time that you came home and you'd been in the sauna at the gym, and I went mad because I was like, here I am doing all sorts. I mean, I was even doing the funniest thing was the oil pulling, the coconut oil that
God's
I swirled
sake.
In my mouth every morning. I was doing all these things. And then you came home and you looked red, and I was like, what have you been doing? That sounds suspicious. But I knew you had been in the sauna, and I was like, your sperm, you need to look after your sperm, Harry.
Yeah, slightly extreme, is it? You did some ridiculous things. I remember that coconut thing. What else did you do?
I think that probably was my most extreme. But
you suddenly wanted to have sex every night as well for the first time. was like, what's this? It's great.
Yeah, it was fun for a little while, wasn't it?
And yeah. Then...
Yeah.
It was a bit like, really? Again? Really?
Yeah.
Come on, let's just have a baby already. No, it is literally like crazy what you were doing. Was it oil swilling?
Oil pulling.
Oil pulling? What does that even mean?
And I was, I was doing so many things. But you'll try anything.
Mm.
You'll try anything. And I remember I was like, please, can you just take your supplements?
Mm-hmm.
Can you... I was trying to encourage you to eat well with me. And actually, to be fair, you were great like that. We would do the shopping list and you would come with me and we would do the cooking. And you never missed an appointment. You came to every appointment with me.
Yeah.
And when we did decide to go through IVF, we did the first injection together.
So I've just got an image of you lying with your legs in the air with five pillows underneath you. So we're talking about the crazy things you're doing and you cannot you cannot avoid that.
No, it's true. I mean, I forgot.
I think you got on the floor and leaned up against the bed with your legs in the air. It's like the most unromantic, unsexy thing ever.
God.
Anyway, what were you saying?
I know, what was I saying?
Shopping lists.
Oh, no, I was saying about how you came to every appointment
yes,
with me.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And... when we did decide to go through IVF, we did the first injection together.
Yes.
And I had my Amazing Things Will Happen card with me and we did that injection. Then we went through the process of IVF and I was most apprehensive about egg collection because I was going to be... it was the sedation that made me pretty anxious. What were your... kind of feelings during IVF? Like, do you feel, because obviously the woman is doing all the injections and she's going through the whole process, did you feel quite separate from it, or did you feel
you
were going through it? Like, you saw my ovaries on screens and you got, like, it was a real science lesson.
It was, but I was never good at science, is he? I'd love for you to quiz me now about fertility and all the technical words and things. Literally, you became an absolute expert. A lot of the, obviously there in the appointments to support you, but like, it was a lot to take in, like...
But you were when it got to the stage of after egg collection and we would call the clinic every day.
Yeah.
We were both willing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, that was, like, mega. Yeah, I was nervous then. But before all of it was kind of, you know, didn't really know what was going on. I just went there to hold your hand, you know. It was like... But I didn't... Obviously, I wanted to, like, show I was interested. I was interested. It's just that, to me... We were doing it and I didn't really need to know all the sciencey stuff. I didn't really... Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the whole process was pretty amazing. Like, when you really think about it, when it came to it, when I started to understand, you know, because I remember at first learning about you get all the follicles or eggs.
Follicles.
Follicles. Yeah. And then you only end up with a certain amount. Yeah, you know, and you know, and then... So it is literally like a... Mm. It's a guessing game and it's...
Because when... it's egg collection. It's the day you have to do your bit as well.
Yes, that's... Yes.
You actually have to turn up and do something.
Yeah.
What was that like? What was the room like?
Just like any other day.
No, but seriously, like... Because I've never actually asked you, where did you go? Do you go to like a small room in the clinic?
It's really weird. Like, this lady just... It's literally, she might as well have just taken me to a room and be like... So if you just like to go in there and...
I mean, it is bizarre, isn't it?
It is really bizarre.
And then...
But also, there's two ways you can look at it. I don't really get embarrassed in those situations. It's just... Because it's just funny, isn't it? It's just... It's beyond embarrassing. It's just ridiculous. But it's just quite practical. It's like, okay, sure. You need a sample of my sperm. I'll be back in 5, maybe 10 minutes.
The first time we had our transfer... we went home and then all of a sudden there's nothing to do for 2 weeks because you're waiting. I think from my memory, that was when your behaviour really changed.
That was the first time I cried about it.
Mm.
I was in the car driving home and I remember calling my mum the night before we were going to do a pregnancy test.
Mm.
And I cried for you though, because I remember saying to mum, I'm just so... I so desperately want her to be pregnant for her sake. I can't cope with the... Not I can't cope. I couldn't deal with, you know, seeing you disappointed, you know. And that was what I was so desperately worried about. You know.
Yeah.
It was that... Yeah, I remember that vividly, just sat outside our house in the car on the phone to my mum.
Because I never knew that. And I only ever knew that when... Because you wrote the chapter in Dare to Dream.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had no idea that that's what you were feeling. And I think that goes, doesn't it, with wanting to just be as supportive as you can be.
Yeah.
But I went on to do the test and it was positive. And I was really elated, but you weren't.
No, I just had a really strange feeling. I don't know why, I just had a strange feeling. I remember your reaction, you were so, so elated and so excited and you were shaking, and I just remember thinking, like, just calm down, like, is this really happening? I just couldn't believe it was happening. Mm. It just didn't feel right, and it never did, really.
Yeah.
I started to believe it towards, like, my birthday and Christmas time, and then I started to allow myself to get excited and... So talk about names. We started imagining, you know, what our child would be like. I couldn't believe it. It was just...
But we did agree together that we would only tell immediate family. We still kept things very private. Not many people knew that we had gone through IVF.
No.
At that point, and it was Christmas time, and we were staying in the hotel where we got married over
That's
Christmas
right.
because my parents' house was full with people.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the night,
yeah.
I started bleeding.
Yeah.
Can you remember how you woke, or did you wake as I went to the loo, or can you remember?
No, I remember waking up and hearing you in the loo saying my name. Yeah, it's one of many, well, one of two or three moments in this whole process that, you know, that are just really kind of horrible, like, sort of heart-sinking moments, you know. But I remember just trying to reassure you instantly because it's that instinct, I think, and this isn't to say that this is me the whole time, it's often you propping me up, but I feel like in this situation, there's no good two of us, you know, completely collapsing. So I just, tried to reassure you. My initial reaction was pure panic and kind of feeling, oh gosh, you know, thinking the worst. But we got through that night and the doctor kind of said that this, it can happen and don't worry, it's not necessarily a problem.
Mm.
And then we drove down to family, didn't we? Went down to
Wiltshire,
stay with family. And I still felt positive. I remember kind of feeling relatively positive. And then on the car journey home, you were really quiet. And I remember saying, "Are you okay?" And you sort of said, "I don't know. I don't quite feel right." And then we got home, and it just everything went quiet. I put the fire on. Made you some soup, did I?
We did, tomato soup, Marmite toast.
Marmite toast. Both the cats went and sat on your lap, which never happens.
Mm. And you got me Winnie the Pooh.
You got you Winnie the Pooh, yeah. And then we just didn't really say much to each other, just watched TV, went to bed. And the next morning was our first scan as well. There's not really much we could say. And then I remember waking up really early. My alarm went off because we had the first appointment at the doctor's, and I went downstairs. It was pitch black. Obviously, it was still the winter. Went downstairs, turned the kitchen light on to make us both a cup of tea, and you know that kind of adrenaline voice, that voice of panic that people have when something bad happens. Like that was what you had, and you were like, "Harry," you were like, "What was it you said? It's gone." I think was it.
Oh.
It's gone. And I was just like, okay. I remember sort of instantly, it was a really strange reaction. I was like, oh, it's okay. Don't worry. It's okay. Like, don't worry. Like, I just ran upstairs and was like, that's okay. Don't worry. Just like, I don't know why I was saying that, but I was just like desperately trying to tell you, I guess it was okay. And then we went, yeah, it was pretty awful. Just got in the car, freezing, winter, dark, drove to the doctors and did the scan. And yeah, there was nothing there.
But then we were also faced with, we'd hadn't flushed the loo.
Yes, yeah, yeah, that's right. You didn't say anything though.
No, I didn't look.
No, I said to the doctor, when you were, you'd had the scan and there was nothing there, and I just quietly said to our doctor, I said, it's in the loo, like the what would you call it? The
fetus?
The baby. Yeah. And I think it's worth pointing out, it was 8 weeks, wasn't it, the miscarriage?
Yeah.
And I said, you know, what do I do? Like, what do people do in this situation? That was awful. That was just awful. I said, what do I do, you know? He said, well, some people like to take it out and bury it in the garden, and some people will flush the loo, and I just said, okay. And then I remember we got home. As soon as we got home, I just went straight upstairs. I didn't even look. I just shut the lid and flushed the loo. Because I just felt that, you know, my own memory and kind of, I suppose, grieving process or whatever, the way I was going to kind of process this emotionally was not going to be dictated to about what I did with the physical thing there. And I just felt like it was the best thing to do, not to kind of put ourselves through any, you know, further kind of...
Yeah, you did the right thing.
Well, I hope so. I don't know. I just made that decision there and then. I didn't even think about it. And then we called... I called my mum and, you know, she said she could tell instantly, and, oh, God, you know, when you hear your parents' voice, you just instantly kind of can break down. And so my dad was in the background. I could hear my mum reacting the way she was reacting, and I just heard him say, what? And he took the phone off my mum and I just said, oh, Dad, you know, we've had a miscarriage. And he just started crying. And that's when I really just, like, properly cried because, you know, my dad, that's the only third time. You know, maybe some people's dads, they never cry, but this is the third time I've heard him cry. You know, I was 27 years old. I'd only heard him cry three times in his life. Once was when I went to boarding school when I was 8. And I thought he was joking, so I wasn't able to, like, feel his emotion. I thought he was joking. The other time was when I did Strictly. He cried because he was proud. And that was a very special moment. And then this was the other time. Yeah, and he's not a very emotional man, so I think to hear him cry was very, just kind of... But it was good. It was what I needed because then I really cried. And then actually it was quite weird because I really cried. And I was like, right, okay, I've had a good cry.
Yeah.
And then I started tidying.
You were on the roof.
I was on the roof.
You were on the roof, clearing the leaves.
Clearing the leaves. Yeah. And I just completely blitzed the entire garden and just cleaned our house head to toe. But, you know, I think we all react in weird ways. You don't know how to process it because you don't know... You know, it's just different stages of pregnancy and different developments.
And I think we just thought, well, that's not going to happen to us. We've gone through all this. We've had, you know, IVF. This isn't going to be our story. And then we tried our best to manage each other's emotions and deal with the grief.
Yeah.
And one of the hardest moments in that was when we found out that my brother and his... wife were expecting a baby.
Yeah. Literally like a week after, was it?
Yeah, it was a few weeks after.
Yeah.
And they, which I have spoken about, and it was, you know, how angry and frustrated and all those terrible emotions when you just, you want to be so happy for someone, but you feel so sorry for yourself.
Yeah, that was hard for you because you felt like a bad person, which you're obviously not, but it made you feel guilty for the way you were feeling.
Yeah. But we got through it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
And went away, I came with you to Australia. You were supporting One Direction.
That's right.
And before that, I had said, look, let's get another round of IVF in before Australia. And I sort of panicked, and you were very much, again, this sort of rational voice and a voice of reason. I think you need to give your body a chance to heal. You need to give yourself time. So we decided we went off to Australia. We bought a house that needed renovating.
Yeah.
And actually just started to slowly rebuild again, didn't we? We kind of felt we were then in a good place to go back for another round.
Well, it was a perfect opportunity to just take a break, wasn't it? And just enjoy each other. And
yeah,
just
and being in Australia, it was the sunshine, it mm-hmm. was healthy lifestyle, it was the best place actually just to escape to.
Yeah.
And then when we came back, we were ready to do another round, which would be with one of our frozen embryos.
That's right.
And we, obviously there's not so much you do through a frozen cycle, but we got to transfer day. And we got gowned up, we went into the room. And we were in this sort of really clinical environment, but then all of a sudden in front of us was... we were shown our embryo on the screen.
Yeah.
And you said to me...
I said, I think it's a girl.
Yeah.
I remember being emotional then, and I don't know why. I think, you know...
it really moved you more than
more
you
than
the,
yeah, more
expected.
Than the, yeah, that's what I mean. I only remember that. I don't remember the first time.
Yeah.
That second time, I just really vividly remember it. And
yeah.
Seeing this embryo on the screen and just feeling really moved. It was a really special, romantic moment that... I feel emotional now. It's ridiculous. It is really emotional.
But it's something
time, yeah.
People don't know about think, IVF as well.
Yeah, I think that's what really important for me in this as a husband, as a man. You know, everyone's different, but you know, some people think of IVF as this really clinical, like scientific experience. But you know, for anyone about to go through it or going through it, it's not just that. You know, it's something you're going through with your partner, your wife, or whatever. And we really felt, you know, it was such a magical thing. It was such a beautiful thing. And it was still really romantic, you know. It's really unique. We were there watching that moment that embryo is transferred, you know. And it felt really kind of privileged to watch that moment.
And actually, I felt connected to you in every possible way.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, we watched the spark go as the embryo was released. On the screen,
yeah.
They show you and the spark went and
yeah.
then off she went. And
because you feel like when you're going through IVF, you feel like, oh, you'll never be that couple that can... we won't experience what it's like to conceive naturally or how it's perceived in TV or movies when someone's doing a pregnancy test and they're like, honey, I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
And it's really romantic. But actually, this is special in its own way. So again, something you felt strongly and I felt strongly about was telling our story about IVF in a positive light, you know, and
yeah.
that it's not all just horrible injections. And yes, there's some really difficult things about it, but there's some really amazing things too. So yeah, I remember that vividly.
And we went back to the clinic for the result,
yes.
which was the longest half an hour of our lives, because we went back for a blood test result and I hadn't done a pregnancy test at home.
Yeah.
And we were taken to the room.
They told us to come back in half an hour.
Half an hour.
We went for a walk and we managed about 10 minutes.
Yeah,
didn't we?
I don't think it was even that. And then they came in and she told us we were pregnant. And it did feel different that time, don't
yeah.
you think?
Yeah, I was very excited.
And although the pregnancy, we were nervous. We were both really nervous. And I think having experienced what miscarriage, the innocence of pregnancy is sort of taken away from you. But went on totally so lucky to have had a healthy pregnancy. And then Lola was born and came into our lives on the 25th of January. 2016. And you turned to me and said, I'll never forget the moment she was born, you said, Izzy, worst case scenario.
Did I say that?
Yeah. It's you, me and Lola.
Oh, okay. I didn't relax throughout the entire pregnancy. Like, I thought, I'll get to the magic 12-week moment and then another 21 weeks or whatever it is, but I never relaxed. And then when you were at 30 weeks, I remember it feeling like every day felt so slow. I was so excited, but so kind of excited, but just desperate for it to happen so that it was there and our baby was there and everything was okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd cried. I got, you know, so I'm saying I don't cry much, but yeah. I'd cried on the phone to my mum. I'd cried on the phone to my dad. And that was it for the 3-year experience that we'd been through.
Yeah.
For this build up. But when Lola was born and, you know, I saw her face for the first time, I mean, I've never cried quite like that in my life. Like,
yeah. The relief.
Not,
it was
yeah,
just
oh my God. Like, I cannot tell you, like, this euphoric feeling like I've never felt before. Just instant love. Like, I feel so lucky to experience that, because a lot of people don't feel that straight away, and often it can take a few months to feel connected to your child, actually, like it did with Kit, you know, our son, who I love equally, I adore, but it wasn't as instant a connection. So yeah, it was.
And I wonder if that was because of the whole everything we had been through up to that point, and then obviously Kit was a complete surprise to us, and you know, we never believed we would be that couple that would be the ones that would have IVF and then fall pregnant naturally, yeah. But we were, and we have Kit, and we often, you know, have the conversation about the frozen embryo that we have sort of left, and wondering, you know, had they chosen the other embryo that we may never have met Lola, and we're sort of left slightly with that open question.
Anyway,
it's amazing to sort of go back and talk to you. And actually, I would say to anybody listening who might be going through with this partner, pretend you're doing a podcast, go into a room, shut the door, and talk like this, because wouldn't you say we haven't actually really talked about it since, like this?
No, I think as well, you know, part of the reason I don't is because you don't ever want to feel like you're feeling sorry for yourself or telling a story, sort of going, oh, poor us. And, you know, because it is, we are so lucky on so many levels in life, you know, and we have the outcome that we wanted. And so I will feel forever grateful about for that, for our children, and are so sympathetic to those that are still going through, you know, fertility issues and what have you.
Because it never leaves you, I don't think.
No.
I think when you've gone through it, it always leaves you wondering what that person might be going through.
Absolutely. But so one thing I would take from it is just, we found it really helped to talk about it, talk your way through the process.
Yeah.
I love talking to friends about it. And yeah, here we are now, and feeling very lucky and very proud that you're continuing your kind of telling of your story and helping others. So yeah, well done you.
So I finish each podcast with some questions that I ask all my guests, so you are not going to escape those.
Okay.
So the first one is...
Where are the house keys?
Yeah, where are the house keys? what did your parents teach you about the meaning of fertility?
I remember my mum literally bursting into my room one day and just being like, oh, I haven't talked to you about the birds and the bees. Literally, like, out of nowhere. And I was, like, 13. And, yeah, it was really a bit awkward. But I kind of knew, I'd learned for myself. But, yeah, we were a pretty open family. We talked pretty openly. I remember my mum telling me about a family member that had miscarriages. So kind of, I guess, from a young age, being able to understand what a miscarriage was. But apart from that, no, I didn't really know much about fertility.
And... what do you feel is the right question to ask someone going through fertility struggles?
I think the best thing to do is to just talk to them and just ask them how they are and to listen, really. I think it's like any situation in life where someone's going through something difficult, it can be awkward for that other person. And sometimes people think it's best to just not say anything. But generally, I think it's better to give that person the option to talk and just... be there to listen. People aren't always necessarily looking for advice. They just want someone to talk to.
And what's the kindest thing you can do for yourself when going through fertility struggles?
What's the kindest? Well, and it's repeating the question, but be kind to yourself. Don't be hard on yourself. Something that I would say to you is it's not your fault. Don't be so hard on yourself. I know that's very difficult. And just take time as a couple or as an individual to do things that you enjoy so you don't get completely wrapped up in the situation.
And what is your mantra, Harry?
Well, let me think. What do I want my children to learn from me? It's important that to be kind to people. You never know what other people are going through. To be kind, polite. That's what I want from my children, really. That's what I love about you. You're very caring. Yeah.
And finally, Harry, I do a little bit of mindfulness at the end of
each
session. So there's something that I want for you, for me to give to you, and also for other couples that might be going through this and are finding it difficult to communicate, and obviously it's a very testing time on a relationship. And it's very, very simply, and as you say, these words. I'll do it once, explaining what the action is, and then I'll do it once without. So you put your hand to your ear. You say, I hear you. You put your hand to your eye. I see you. You put your hand to gesture to the person in front of you, and you say, you matter. And then you put your hand on your heart, and you say, I'm here. So it's, I hear you. I see you. You matter. I'm here.
That's me feeling. That's not me laughing at you. You're so sweet.
Uh-oh.
No, but in all seriousness, just to finish, it is stressful. Let's not lie as well. We did go through very stressful times where we argued, and there were many moments where we did have to just say stop, just stop, be kind to each other, because it is stressful. And so I think that's a very good piece of advice, and I'll remind you of that later when you're getting annoyed with me.
And I'll remind you too. Thanks, Harry.
Pleasure.